Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Welcome, everyone. Good evening. Tonight, Les will be giving a talk. I think all of you know Les, and the name of the talk is The Sound of Stone. So, welcome, Les.
Thank you. Okay. Well, it is, it's very heartening to see all of you here tonight. I kind of thought maybe after what we saw last night on the screen, maybe you'd want to shut off your screens for tonight. So it's heartening to see you here, still involved in the practice and still wanting to be with each other. That's so vital these days. So let me start with a story from the golden age of Zen in 9th century China. Story of Kyogen. Kyogen, as a young monk, was a very brilliant scholar. He was an expert on all of the sutras. And he was always reciting the sutras. And he was always quoting from them. And Kyogen was a disciple of the very beloved Kwai Shan, who was known as a very, very kind-hearted master. He was never strict with his students, just encouraged them in a very gentle way. So one day, Kyogen went to his teacher, Kwai Shan, to discuss his practice. And when he bowed to Kwai Shan and he sat down, and he immediately quoted from a sutra. And Kwai Shan said to him, "I don't want to know what you learned from your studies. Just say in one word what your original being was before your parents gave you birth and prior to your capacity to discriminate." So, of course, Kwai Shan's meaning is, express your understanding by showing your inherent self that exists before your body and mind. Kyogen said nothing. Kyogen remained silent. Actually, I think Kyogen went into shock hearing what his teacher said to him. He was confused and he didn't know what to think, because Kwai Shan's words to him were much different than what he was accustomed to, because the way Kwai Shan spoke to him was not about thinking, and it was not about knowledge, and it was not about what was in Kyogen's mind. Kwai Shan was pointing to something else. So Kyogen did not know how to answer. So he left. He left Kwai Shan and he left the monastery. And he went away to think about what Kwai Shan had said. So he did some research to try to understand what Kwai Shan had told him. And of course, what did he do? He reviewed the sutras. That was his way. Several weeks later, he went back to Kwai Shan and he gave an answer. And Kwai Shan rejected his student's answer. And this made Kwai Shan very anxious and very nervous. And Kyogen begged Kwai Shan for an answer. And Kwai Shan said one of the most important things that we learn in Zen practice. Kwashan said to Kyogen, whatever I say is according to my understanding, and it will not benefit you. Kwashan didn't quite understand that, and he became very discouraged. He left the monastery. He got rid of all of his books, all of his sutras, and he simply gave up studying, and he became a hermit. Became a hermit in a hut on a mountain. And one day while sweeping up the debris in front of his hermitage, a stone struck a bamboo tree, and there was a loud sound. And the sound opened Kyogen's mind. It opened his mind. So he changed out of his work clothes and into his robes. He lit incense and he bowed. He bowed facing his teacher's mountain and he said, your kindness is beyond that of my parents. If you had said anything that day, this could not have happened. Here's another story, a shorter story, but of a similar theme. It's about Tozan, who was the founder of the Soto school in China. When he was at the monastery, when he was the abbot of the monastery, they prepared for a celebration to honor the anniversary of his teacher's death. His teacher was Yun Yen. A monk came to Tozan and he said, when you were with Yun Yen, what instruction did he give you? And Tozan said, when I was with him, he neither instructed or directed me. And the monk said, well, then why do you celebrate him? Tozan said, I don't revere him for his virtue or his learning, but because he did not tell me any secrets. When we first come to practice, when we are new to this practice, we want to learn. We come to learn something. And this is very natural expectation. We want to understand the secret of life. We want to understand the mystery. We want answers to our spiritual questions. This is the main reason we come to practice. We want explanations for life's confusions, something that will center us and settle us down. We want to know how to resolve life's difficulties. So in the beginning, when we first discover our practice, we have a great deal of anticipation, great deal of anticipation, and sometimes some excitement. But after a time, when explanations don't appear and secrets don't appear, we feel like we've hit a wall and we don't know how to proceed. We've hit a wall that we don't know how to get over. So what very often happens, we start looking for techniques to get over the wall. Is there a ladder around here? We want to get over this wall. We want answers to our questions and to our seeking. And these days, you know, by now, Zen practice has been in this country for 60 or 70 years. And many books are now available, and there are seminars. There's YouTube videos. There's blogs, and there are apps. All these things are available to us. all promising to unlock the secrets. And there's a big industry has developed to help us in our search for some technique. Or, in other words, to satisfy our desire for a quick and easy way to get answers to our questions. Probably these are the same questions that Tozan and Kyogen had. I don't imagine they're very much different, even though they were 1,000 years before us. So we see today what we see as what we see possibility of shortcuts to wisdom. And many people spend some time searching outside of themselves, reading books and going to seminars and listening to lectures, looking for the technique that will help them answer their questions. But better than any technique is our attitude. Our attitude that motivates us to continually apply what we have already learned in our practice, even though we may still be very new. Our attitude should be, apply what you've learned. And don't worry about how much you've learned. You might feel the percentage of what you learned is very small to what you might ultimately learn. We don't worry about how much we've learned. We just simply apply what we've learned. And this kind of attitude, the attitude that doesn't worry about searching for some shortcut technique, but simply applies what we've learned, this is confidence. This is confidence that our wisdom will continue to unfold through our own personal effort. So these days, there are a number of people who actually can make a living offering tips and techniques and shortcuts, promising to answer such questions as, how to bring practice into your daily life, or how to get enlightened, or how to stop your mind from wandering. But looking for the right technique or studying these techniques is a way of learning that does not help us. Of course, our practice is about learning, but not in the usual sense. If we insist on learning in the usual way, it will be a waste of time. We will become discouraged, just like Kyogen. He was discouraged because he did not get an answer from his teacher. In our practice, learning does not come from absorbing words from somebody else or from collecting knowledge outside of ourself. And this is what Kwaishan was trying to tell Kyogen. In the Soto Zen tradition, good teachers do not explain. They know that if they say too much, they will deprive their students of true learning. And Suzuki Roshi gave us some examples of this when he was with us several years ago. In one very famous example, a young man from England found Zen Center, was interested in the practice, and he went to Suzuki Roshi, and he asked Roshi to explain Zen to him. Please explain Zen practice. Suzuki Roshi's response was inviting him to come to Zazen. And I had a wonderful example of this way with him. In my early days of the practice, a long time ago by now, I came to him with a personal problem, feeling that he would have some wisdom to help me work through it. So I went to him and I explained my concern to him, and he said, "Oh, how is Mary-san?" Another teacher from Japan once said to me, "The most important technique is people's own sincerity." And I was very fortunate to hear this. For me, it was like a stone striking the bamboo. When we are interested or even anxious about finding some shortcut or technique to help us with the difficulty of an impatient mind, we find no peace when we search for a shortcut. But our practice is not difficult because of our busy mind or physical discomfort. This is a misunderstanding that beginners usually have. There does not exist a technique to fix these difficulties, the difficulties of an impatient and grasping mind. Zen practice becomes difficult when we don't trust it. And trust can be very difficult at first because its practice is unfamiliar. We're confused by it. There's some discomfort. There's so much we don't understand. But when we start to feel the value of the Sangha that is supporting the practice, our trust in the practice starts to build slowly. So it's important to trust our practice. That's the main thing. To trust it and continue with our practice despite any expectations of ours that have not been met. So, as an example, if you go to your teacher and say, How do I prevent my mind from wandering around? My mind is so distracted. How do I prevent my mind from wandering? The teacher will probably stay silent. And all you will hear is the breathing. If your body hurts from this unfamiliar posture, we have to forget the idea of what we call hurts. Let it hurt without worrying about it, without trying to escape it. We simply bring our awareness back to our breath. This takes discipline and this takes practice. And we can't do this practice without discipline. And if we get confused along the way, as we're gaining experience with our practice, if we get confused, we are told, return your awareness to your breath. That's all. And as Suzuki Roshi said, this attitude is what builds character. So it is a misunderstanding, it's a mistake to search for techniques to answer our spiritual questions. If we continue searching for shortcuts like that, the mind will continually wander aimlessly, and our confusion will not diminish. There is no special technique to empty the mind. There is only the sincerity of our effort. We continually bring our mind back to the present, stay in the moment. This is the only technique there is. The only technique in our practice is what we call detachment. Detachment from old ideas, whether they are our own or whether they come from others. We all have a big question these days about how to take practice into daily life. We feel we have a life in the Zendo and we have a life outside of the Zendo at work and at home. We want to learn how to take the practice into daily life. We study this question, we talk to each other about this question, and it turns out this approach is a misunderstanding. We cannot pick up and take practice from here to there. Practice is not movable. It is not a thing. Practice is not something that we move around. Practice is always with us, both here and there, in the Zendo, at home, on the job, on the freeway. No need to worry about how to take it from here to there. Practice is always with us. We often use an expression such as Zen and everyday life, as if they were two different things. This expression does not mean that we should find a way to take Zazen practice into everyday life using some technique. So rather than concern ourselves with how to take Zen practice from here to there, instead, we should acquire a deep understanding of the teaching and of Buddha's spirit. This is why we practice Zazen. To feel the teaching, to bring the teaching into our life. Then we don't have to take it from here to there. And this is the true way. Actually, there is no such thing as Zen or everyday life. And there's no such thing as Zen and everyday life. Both of these are the true expression of the true spirit of the Buddha, the spirit to help others, the spirit to maintain our practice and to support our society and the whole world. So simply, let us just practice here tonight, with each other, with sincerity. And then your practice will express itself in your daily life without interference. And we have to trust this point. So maybe you came here tonight with the idea that, well, maybe I'll pick up something. Maybe I'll learn something. You know, this is trying to learn in the usual way by picking up something, to learn something about Zen or to learn some technique to help practice. But actually, my words are useless. My words are useless to you. no true help can come from my words or anybody else's words, including Suzuki Roshi's words. We find help in our life, we find understanding in our life when we trust ourselves. When we trust ourselves and our practice, then our mind can become free. Just like Kyogen's mind became free when the stone struck a bamboo. Thank you. And if anybody has a question, we can try to have a discussion. Does anybody have a question? Teresa?
Hi, Les.
Hi, Teresa.
Good evening. Thank you for your talk. So you said that the best Zen teachers, they remain quiet when you go with a question. So why do we need a teacher then?
Well, you know, when a baby is born, we don't simply put the baby out on the street and say, there you are, you're independent, you're on your own. The baby needs nurturing. The baby needs kindness and support and love. And someday the baby becomes an adult and leaves. In the same way, when we are baby Buddhas and we are with a teacher, we trust that teacher like a baby trusts his mother. And we let that teacher guide us according to his or her wisdom. It's not the words of the teacher that we need to help us mature. It is the support, the encouragement, the humor, and the feeling of being made safe. This is our practice, which goes beyond words. Thank you.
Dave?
To follow up on Teresa's question, Les, I would be tempted to say perhaps that in terms of questions and answers, the teacher's job is not to give you answers to your questions, but to give you questions for you to answer. Is that fair to say?
Well, maybe, but not in the usual sense of questions and answers. The teacher's job is to help you open your mind, to orient your mind to the larger world, and not to a narrow view that you may be carrying. So when the stone hit the bamboo for Kyogen and there was a sound, it was like the egg being cracked open. And the small world of the chick became infinite. That's the role of the teacher, to show us, to help us see the infinite world. not the narrow world. Thank you.
Giuseppe.
Hello.
Hello, Giuseppe.
Hey.
Good evening.
So I want to, we talked about the role of the teacher and I want to talk about the student. If the teacher has useless words, the student doesn't get any better. The I think we I also made that mistake, and I thought that I also I think I've been thinking of practice as a self-improvement in a practical sense. Mm-hmm. And it's that could be in the moral sense or in the calming sense, and that or even I think my personal feeling was always of like practice is a step within. Is going inside yourself, searching inside yourself. And indeed, I don't think you find anything inside yourself or outside yourself. And and that's tough to see, or like it escapes. We do want to gain something inside, you know, even if we think we are detached from outside, we want to gain something inside. So the student in the end doesn't know where to place his head, where to focus is think that his own self is and his effort should be pointed to, and so but he continues to practice and just sees things slightly different and has a little more courage to go without any understanding or secret into life, both inner life and outer life. So, do you think that is a good description of how a Zen student should be, or I'm missing something?
Mm-mm. Mm-hmm. You know, the thoughts that arise constantly in our consciousness gives us the impression that there's somebody in there. You know, our mind says, there's got to be somebody there creating these thoughts. How else could they arise? And we first come to practice, we have this idea. I want to find out who that is. I wanted to find out who's saying all those things and getting confused by these ideas. Who is that? Is it me? But after we practice for a while, when the new student starts to develop some insight and some maturity and gains some experience with a very quiet mind, a mind that has had some opportunities to just be still and to let the thoughts settle down. This idea that there's somebody inside there starts to diminish. The quiet that we experience in our Zazen practice, the mind free from thoughts, is a great gift because we begin to see that there's nobody in there. There's nobody that we have to try to explain or expose. We don't have to expose ourselves. It's like, you know, the famous Dogen quote, study Buddhism is to study the self. And then he says, to study the self is to forget the self. So with some experience and some dedication to practice, we begin to see that our initial understanding was misplaced through no fault of our own. And that as we can move away from that original worldview of what things are inside our head, as we move away from that, we begin to see that there's no special thing that needs enlightenment. We're not special, we are just with everyone else as part of something very great. Something very great that cannot be described. Now, this is why the first few months or years of Zen practice are very important. Newcomers need support and encouragement from the Sangha so that they will continue to explore what they're learning and not be put off by discouragement. So all of us here tonight are teachers for each other in the way that our practice encourages and inspires one another and anybody else who may come our way. Thank you.
Thank you.
Nick?
Nick?
Hi, Les.
Hi, Nick. Welcome. Hi. Yeah.
My question is about Kyogen. Was Kyogen's awakening a sudden awakening or a gradual awakening? Or is there even a distinction in awakening?
Kyogen was always awake, only he didn't know it. Thank you.
Thank you, Les.
Brenda?
What is the best way to help one another?
Is that a trick question?
No.
Well, you already know the answer to that. I know you, we know you, and we know that you already know the answer to that. So that's a trick question. That's like saying, who won the debate? Nobody can answer that. Thank you.
Vanessa.
Hi, Les.
Hi, Vanessa.
I was thinking about the story that you referred to briefly of your experience with Suzuki Roshi when you went to him with a personal issue so many years ago and his reaction. And my question to you, I suppose, would be how did you hold that at the time? Like, how did that land with you at the time, because it reminds me of a lot of exchanges that I had with teachers sort of earlier on in practice, that that I also found those reactions to be, I was quite shaken by them, I think, earlier on in practice, because I was expecting something else. And I think I was projecting a lot emotionally onto the figure of the teacher. I think it's such a complex relationship. So I'm curious, like, how that made you feel and what you feel you took away from that and you learned from it.
When I went to him with this question, I thought my problem or my concern was pretty serious, and that out of his kindness, he would help me solve it. And I was disappointed that I went away empty-handed. I thought I did. I wasn't given a solution or even a hint. And that's not true. I was given a hint. I said, "Here's my problem." And he said, "How's your wife?" "Reorient yourself," he was saying. "You don't have to worry about yourself so much. Take care of the people and the things that you should take care of. And then there won't be any problems." Mm-hmm. I didn't understand that immediately. It took me a while for that to seep in. But that's the way he was. He reoriented me. He pointed me in a different direction. He was saying, "Your direction won't help you. You're concerned about yourself. Turn your direction to the wider world. Take care of the people you need to take care of. Have a bigger mind," he was saying. Took me a while to understand that. But that was his gift. He planted a seed that he wants you to help plant, or he plants a seed that he wants you to nurture and see what blooms. "How's your wife?" he said. "How's your wife?" Thank you.
Any other questions?
I'd like to say hi to Janet, who's come back for a while. I'd like to say hi to Will Robinson, who we haven't seen in a while. Hi, Will. Let's see, who else haven't we seen in quite a while? Oh, Wally, welcome back, Wally. And Don, well, it is good to see all of you.
Eric Geist, haven't seen you in a while. Welcome.
Oh, I didn't see, that's a different Eric. Who's Eric?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, there you are. Okay. Yeah, I see. Hi, Eric.
Both Erics. Hi.
And, Tigran, we haven't seen you in some time. Welcome, Tigran.
Thank you. Thank you, Liz. Thank you. Enjoy your talk.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Maybe this is a good time to introduce newcomers as well. Oh, sorry, Wally, were you going to say something? Okay. Maybe not.
Well, yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hello, Les.
Hi, Willie.
It's been a few years.
Yeah.
Decade or more. But that last thing that you said is how I remember you. How you said things that seemingly made no sense to me at the time, but I thought about them. And after a while, it made sense. So thank you.
So it's great to see a lot of familiar faces, and it's great to hear Les again. I think I'll be coming regularly from now on.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Well, Gary, can you tell us what where you are? What is the background behind you, the hallway?
The background, it's a photograph that I took in Japan last November. It's Eiheiji, it's one of the two largest Zen temples in Japan. It's I guess English translation would be Temple of Eternal Peace.
Okay, Eiheiji.
And this is just Eiheiji.
Yeah.
So, thank you.
Thank you.
Beautiful. I do see one other person I don't recognize, but only on audio. Charlene, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. Hi. I'm Charlene. It was quite a while ago that I joined in Kanando, but I actually went to Insight Meditation for some time in Redwood City. So it's nice to be back and hear Les again. I really appreciate the community here and hearing his wisdom. Thank you.
Charlene.
Nice to meet you, Charlene. Oh, and there's another one, Anaya. We have a lot of people we haven't seen in a while.
Hi. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Hi, it's absolutely wonderful to be back again. I used to come in for meditation in 2018, and a lot of changes happened over the entire last year. And I'm back again now. I've been trying to practice by myself, but figured that it is time to get back into the Sangha and get a lot more support. So hearing Les talk today, the topic that you spoke about, it kind of made me realize that I have been going through the exact same thought process, and I have ultimately reached the point where I found the knowledge that Les gave today. And I won't say it's knowledge, but it is something that I needed reiteration for myself about, that my own practice will give me whatever answers I need. So thank you so much, Les, for the talk today. It was really, really it was really wonderful. And it's really, really great to be back again. Thank you.
Okay. Welcome.
This talk was brought to you by the Kanando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to kanando.org. That's kanando.org.